Before we get started with the sermon this afternoon, I wanted to ask, do we have any gardeners in the congregation? Yeah, please raise your hand if you're a gardener. We've got a few gardeners out there. I do use that term loosely. Even if it's something as simple as growing some tomatoes in a container on the back patio, we're going to call that gardening. So, yeah, we do have some gardeners in the congregation. I think there's a lot that we can learn. There's a lot that we can learn from the process of growing a garden, of watching something grow, caring for it, nurturing it, reaping the fruit from our labors. Again, even if that's something as simple as container gardening on the patio, there's so much that we can learn from that process. Up in Gladewater, we didn't grow a garden every year, but we would often have a vegetable patch in the backyard. Certainly wasn't elaborate by any means, but there really is something very inspiring about watching plants grow. And for me, especially plants that produce food. I enjoy flowers and those sorts of things, don't get me wrong, but I really appreciate the plants that produce food, because then I can take that food into the house and I can eat it. It's a rewarding experience. I recently got my hands on some documentation, vegetable garden planting dates. It's a chart tailored specifically for Harris County, right here in Houston. The ideal planting dates for all sorts of vegetables that you may be interested in growing. Some of those dates are actually coming up very soon for a lot of your common vegetable varieties. You know, at least with the chart that I have, you want to get some of that stuff in the ground here pretty soon, as early as March and some of it's in April. But those dates are coming up very soon. What I'd like to do today is I want to draw out some spiritual parallels to growing our garden. There are lots of things that we can learn and be reminded of, even for those of you, which is actually the majority of the room, for those of you who did not raise your hands. Those of you who are not gardeners, perhaps you've never grown vegetables before, still think there's a lot that we can learn from the process. For those of you who have grown gardens, you understand how much work is involved in preparing ahead of time. You can't just toss a bunch of seeds out into the lawn and hope for the best. There's a whole lot more to it than that. I want to begin today by turning to the book of Hosea. If you'll turn to Hosea with me as you're turning there, I'm going to explain what my intentions are. I'm going to break down the steps involved with gardening and pull out some applications for us within the pages of the Bible. Hosea chapter 10 is where we're going to start. The first step in growing a garden, you've got to prepare the soil. You've got to prepare the soil. And talking with Mr. Butler, he does it in a much more efficient way than I've ever done it personally. Over at the Butler house, they've got raised beds for their garden. The idea behind that is you build it up off the topsoil, then you fill in those raised beds with potting soil, and you simply go from there. I never did that. Maybe I should have. It would have been a whole lot easier on my back, I'm quite sure, but I didn't. Again, we're addressing this first step of growing a garden. You've got to prepare the soil. Hosea chapter 10. To give a little context to what we're about to read here, Israel had fallen into idolatry. Their heart was divided. It says that up in verse 2. Their heart was divided. Now, this was somewhere around a couple hundred years after the kingdom had been divided, after the kingdom was split with Judah in the south and Israel in the north. And so Hosea is specifically addressing Israel here. They weren't committed to serving God and serving God alone. Unfortunately, that relationship had been tainted with idolatry and sin. Verse 12 is what I'd like for us to read. Hosea chapter 10, verse 12. Sow for yourselves righteousness, reap in mercy. These were things that they had not been doing faithfully. Well, let's continue on with the verse. Break up your fallow ground, for it's time to seek the Lord till he comes and rains righteousness on you. Well, I think that's an interesting picture to think about. Break up your fallow ground. Here shortly we'll get into more about what that actually means, but for now let's focus on the condition of their heart. It was divided. The relationship that they had with God had been contaminated. Further comments are made in the book of Jeremiah. If you'll turn over there with me to Jeremiah chapter 4. Jeremiah chapter 4. So this is later down the timeline with Jeremiah. He did not come onto the scene until much later, after Hosea. And Jeremiah is addressing Judah. So Hosea is talking to Israel. What we're about to read here from Jeremiah, under the inspiration of God, this statement was made toward Judah. Different time frame, different audience, but it's the very same message. It's Jeremiah chapter 4, verse 1. Jeremiah 4, verse 1. If you will return, O Israel, says the Lord, return to me. And if you will put away your abominations out of my sight, then you shall not be moved. And you shall swear the Lord lives in truth, in judgment, and in righteousness. The nations shall bless themselves in him, and in him they shall glory. For thus says the Lord to the men of Judah and Jerusalem, break up your fallow ground, and do not sow among thorns. Again, I want to come back to this fallow ground, but notice what it says about their heart in verse 4. Circumcise yourselves to the Lord. Take away the foreskins of your heart. You men of Judah, take away the foreskins of your hearts, you men of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem, lest my fury come forth like fire and burn so that no one can quench it because of the evil of your doings. Just like we saw back in Hosea, there was something interfering with that relationship with God, something preventing their heart from faithfully committing to God. In other words, their hearts were hardened. In both places, we see this phrase, fallow ground. What is fallow ground? Simply put, it's a piece of land that's not currently in use. It's fully capable of being used, but fallow ground sits unoccupied. It's not been tilled, it's unproductive, unfruitful, and many times it's overgrown with weeds, thorns. Perhaps that reminds you of the parable of the sower. A sower went out to sow seed. Some of that seed fell upon the wayside. Some fell on the stony places. Some among the thorns. And remember, the thorns choked out the seed. They choked out the seed so that it was not productive. That's the idea here with this fallow ground. With the condition that it's in, the ground's hard. But not only that, it's also full of weeds and thorns, which would hinder any seed from being productive. So he says, break up your fallow ground. The idea of running down to Home Depot and buying some bags of potting soil, that was not an option. You simply had to work with the land that you had. As I mentioned earlier, some modern-day gardeners have gotten smart and incorporated some efficient ways with the raised beds, bringing in external potting soil that's really specifically designed for those plants to be productive. That was not my experience with gardening. Every year I planted a garden, I was out there manually digging up the ground, and all I had to do that with was a shovel. If you can imagine digging up about 200 square feet of grass and topsoil, turning it over and tilling it by hand with nothing but a shovel. It's definitely a workout, I'm going to tell you. I know that there are better ways of doing that, but the experience really helps me bring that verse to life, bring that idea of breaking up your fallow ground. The process of tilling the soil, breaking it up, loosening it, turning it over, it's very beneficial to the soil. It's very beneficial to prepare that soil before you plant your seeds. Your garden's going to be much more productive if you till the soil beforehand. It will aerate the soil, allowing for the nutrients and oxygen to find their way down to the roots of your plant, and the water too. A hard and compact soil doesn't absorb water very well. There's a lot of runoff when you're dealing with hard, compact soil that hadn't been tilled. But once you till that soil, it does a much better job of absorbing water, which will certainly benefit the plants. They're going to be much more productive. It also helps with keeping the weeds out. I didn't know that, but it helps with keeping the weeds out. Experts say that if you turn your soil over at least twice a year, you're much less likely to have a problem with weeds taking over your gardening space. Doing that maintenance is profitable for the overall health of your soil. Again, draw out that parallel between the parable of the sower. You know, the weeds, the thorns, they have a tendency of getting in there and choking out the seed, making the seed unfruitful. So you see there's benefits to breaking up your fallow ground. Strangely enough, tilling the soil, that's often the most overlooked step that people make when they're planting a garden. That's the number one thing that they overlook, is tilling the soil. But it's so important, because the soil is the foundation of your garden. It's what you work off of. We've looked at ancient Israel and Judah, two different audiences, two different timelines, but it's the same message in both cases. They'd allowed their hearts to become hardened. Their hearts were that compacted soil, hadn't been turned over and properly prepared. Weeds and thorns had found their way in there. You know, we've been given that very same message as well. Break up your fallow ground. Let's go to James chapter 5. James chapter 5. Is there any potential of our hearts becoming divided, where we may overlook this first step of planting a spiritual garden, preparing the soil, tilling it up, breaking up the fallow ground that's in our heart? Do we have any fallow ground in our heart that needs to be broken up? James chapter 5, verse 7. James 5, verse 7. Therefore be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until it receives the early and latter rain. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Or, as my margin says, the coming of the Lord draws near. Establish your hearts. That's very similar language to what we saw earlier. Circumcise your hearts. Prepare the soil. Break up your fallow ground. Turn it up, or turn it over. Turn it over. Till it up. Remove any of those weeds and thorns that don't need to be there, because those things will hinder the development of the seed. It won't grow as well as it could otherwise. Several others have mentioned this already, but we do look towards the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread coming up before too long. This week's member letter actually made mention of that. Passover's coming up soon. We need to be preparing for that. And part of our Passover preparation involves the process of self-examination. You know, we want to make sure that we're prepared to keep the Passover in a worthy manner. But I do believe it's also a very good time to consider the process or progress of our own personal conversion. That's where the Days of Unleavened Bread come in, talking about taking in righteousness and putting out sin. It's certainly emphasized during the Days of Unleavened Bread, but that's something we need to be working on all year long. With that said, I think it's very interesting to think about that in terms of breaking up your fallow ground. Without a doubt, every one of you here today, and I include those connected on the webcast, each one of you have some beautiful gardens, productive crops growing in your hearts. You do. But may I ask, do you have any fallow ground? As I consider my personal heart, yes, I've been working on this little garden over here, establishing my heart, turning over the soil, pulling out the weeds, all those sorts of things. But I may have another section over here on this side that needs a little bit more attention. Is it possible that we ever look at that and think to ourselves, you know what, that's too much work to get down there and clean all of that up. I think I'd rather sit over here in this area of the garden where it's a little easier. Let me just focus on this section. Focus on making it pretty and presentable, fruitful, but I think I'm going to ignore what's going on over here on this side. And when I say that, I'm not directing that towards this side of the congregation. I'm representing my heart here, okay? I think I'll just let this area of my heart lie fallow a little bit longer. I don't want to deal with that just yet. And that's the way it is sometimes, am I right? Certain areas where we may be much better at overcoming and repenting of, whereas there may be other areas of our heart that aren't quite so easy for us to maintain. That's what we're told to do. It says to break up your fallow ground, to establish your heart. So it's personal. It's personal for every one of us. While we may have a very productive row of crops over here, thriving in good soil, producing good results to God's glory, we may have this fallow ground sitting over here on this side, lying dormant, not being productive at all. Just a quick example for your consideration. Maybe you're very good at serving the fatherless and the widows, but you find it much more difficult to forgive others. You know, that's just one small example. You could bring up many different things to think about. That word fallow, fallow is not a matter of being left unused by complete accident. That's not the case. It's not by accident. Rather, fallow ground's intentionally left unused. As we continue to examine ourselves, particularly talking about our heart today, do we have any areas of our heart that we're intentionally leaving fallow? If so, we should seriously consider this statement. Break up your fallow ground. We've already been talking about how good soil is foundational for a successful garden to flourish. It's not just about the soil, though. The seeds that we plant are also very important. The seeds that we plant are very important. You can prepare some of the most beautiful soil, but if you don't plant any seeds in that soil, then you're actually not going to grow anything. Speaking of seeds, on a very basic physical level, the world that we live in places a very high value on seeds. I came across an article a few weeks ago that discussed the current price structure of seeds. I was amazed, really, at what I saw. Over the past few decades, the price that farmers pay for their seed has increased 270%. And if you want to talk about GMOs, genetically modified seeds, the price for those has increased almost 700% over the same period of time. 700% just speaks to how valuable, at least monetarily speaking, how valuable seeds really are. Got a few pictures I'd like to share with you this afternoon. I'll give Mr. Winkay a moment to get the slideshow started for us. But this first picture on the screen, I'm curious. This first picture on the screen, does anyone out there recognize this structure? Yeah, we've got two, three, yeah. Okay, yeah. We've got some people recognizing it, so. As I understand it, Mr. Morgan talked about Lord of the Rings last week. This building does have that science fiction look to it, doesn't it? Looks like something out of science fiction. It's actually a real building, located in Norway of all places. It sits on a remote island called Spitsbergen. Spitsbergen sits between Norway and the North Pole, mainland Norway. So it's way up there in the Arctic region where it's very cold. The name of this place is the Global Seed Vault. The Global Seed Vault. It was funded by the Norwegian government nearly 20 years ago now. They spent around $9 million constructing this place. I can only imagine the challenges they would have run into considering the climate that it sits in. Now, there are other locations around the world that store the seed supplies for nations around the world, but this structure in Spitsbergen is the world's largest. It's the largest seed vault in the world, containing over 1 million different seed varieties. And those seed varieties come from almost every single nation across the planet. As we go on to the second slide, you can see how this building was literally carved into the side of a mountain. Near the very back of the structure are three separate compartments, and that's where the seeds are actually stored. It's just racks and racks of seeds. Some of those racks can be seen on the lower side of that slide. And again, we're talking about 1 million different varieties. There's definitely a reason why this place is so remote. They don't want anybody to access those seeds. In fact, only a handful of people are ever allowed access to this building. It remains completely closed up, except for a few times a year. And that's only because those few times a year is when they add more seeds to the storage. Here's a quote from a Time magazine article that was written about the Global Seed Vault. Here's the quote. "Deep in the bowels of an icy mountain on an island above the Arctic Circle between Norway and the North Pole lies a resource of vital importance for the future of humankind. It's not coal, oil, or precious metals, but seeds. Millions of these tiny brown specks from a variety of food crops are stored in the Global Seed Vault." The article then goes on to explain the purpose this seed vault has. It's referred to as the Doomsday Vault. Doomsday Vault. The seeds lying in deep freeze in this vault include wild and old seed varieties, many of which are not in general use anymore, and many don't exist outside the seed collections that they came from. I find that fascinating. For some of those seeds, the only ones in existence are laying up there in that vault. Now for the reason behind doing all of this. The diversity of these seeds could provide the traits needed to adapt to a changing world environment. Of the 200,000 rice varieties, for example, there may be one that's very well suited to adapt to a much higher ambient temperature, or to find resistance to pests, or a disease of some kind. The intentions of the Global Seed Vault are to protect food security and plant diversity. I'll say that again, it's to protect food security and plant diversity. As you really think about all the efforts involved with constructing this place, maintaining it, keeping it stocked full of seeds, not to mention the initial upfront cost of $9 million, it just speaks to how significant and truly valuable seeds are. On the surface, seeds may seem small and insignificant, but they are valuable to this world's food supply. And there are individuals that go through great lengths to protect them. As we talk about the analogy of our spiritual garden, we've seen the importance of the soil. That's where we started. But the seeds that we plant in that soil are also very important. So let's spend some time looking at the value of planting seeds. Not stockpiling them in a remote region, essentially keeping them away from the world, but planting them. Of course, we know there are good seeds and bad seeds. I won't spend too much time talking about the bad seeds. I think those are probably fairly obvious, but let's briefly jump over to Proverbs 6. Proverbs chapter 6, we'll briefly touch on some of those bad seeds and what they look like. Verse 12. Proverbs Proverbs 6, verse 12. A worthless person, a wicked man, walks with a perverse mouth. He winks with his eyes, he shuffles his feet, points his fingers. Perversity is in his heart. So we see that picture of planting the wrong kinds of seeds. He's planting bad seeds in the soil. Continuing on, he devises evil continually. He sows discord. And what becomes of sowing those bad seeds? Verse 15. Therefore his calamity shall come suddenly. Suddenly he shall be broken without remedy. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. Verse 17, a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among the brethren. Anytime something like this is repeated in the Bible, the goal is to get our attention, to explain how important it is to God. And he mentions it twice here in this passage. Those who sow bad seed, those who sow discord, it's incredibly dangerous. But it's not the only thing the Lord hates. We have six other bad seeds that it talks about here that we don't want getting anywhere near our garden. We don't want to have these things in our heart, because they will eventually sprout, grow, potentially becoming even more dangerous. So it's a caution for every one of us. Rather than letting any of these bad seeds find their way in, we want to plant the good seeds. And that's really what I want to spend more time focusing on today, sowing the good seeds. Let's go to Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6. What seeds should we be growing? Or should I say sowing? What seeds should we be sowing? And what value do we place on sowing those seeds? Galatians chapter 6, verse 6. Galatians 6, verse 6. Let him who is taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches. Do not be deceived. God's not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. You reap what you sow. Even Jesus Christ himself said over in the gospel accounts, he said, you're not going to gather grapes from thorn bushes. You're not going to get figs from brambles. No, you're going to reap what you sow. It's a natural law of creation. But because of that, we should be very particular about the seeds that we do sow. We want those good seeds. Verse 8. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. How do we do that? How do we reap everlasting life? Well, we sow the right seeds. It's another reminder of just how valuable seeds really are. Let's continue on with the passage. We'll come back to what's mentioned here in verse 8, but let's continue in verse 9. And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. We have access to seeds that lead to everlasting life. How exciting is that to you? I mean, you know, we're coming up on March and April. I'll probably get some tomatoes in the ground before too long. There's nothing quite like watching fruit grow in your own personal garden, to see that life develop, to actually taste the fruit that comes from your own garden. It's really exciting to me. Maybe that worries you a little bit that I get excited over a vegetable garden. I don't know, but I think we should all get excited about the promise of everlasting life. That should be incredibly exciting. But what are these seeds? Let's get into more specific details on what we're talking about. Seeds that lead to everlasting life. What are these seeds that we can be planting right now? The Psalms of Ascent were a collection of psalms sung by the Israelites as they ascended to Jerusalem. It's a mountainous area around Jerusalem, so they ascend to it as they journeyed in. This would take place three times annually, the three pilgrimage festivals, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Weeks, or Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacles. Turn over to Psalm 126 with me, if you would. Psalm 126, it sits right in the middle of these Psalms of Ascent. It's 120 to 134. Let's read a section from Psalm 126. When you think about seeds, perhaps this is not one that comes to your mind immediately. It's starting in verse 1. Psalm 126, verse 1. When the Lord brought back the captivity of Zion, we were like those who dream. So this gives us the context here of this chapter. It's the period of time after they were allowed to return to Jerusalem. Verse 2, then our mouths were filled with laughter and our tongues with singing. And they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us, and we are glad. Bring back our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the south. Not everyone was allowed to return immediately. There would have been some who hadn't made that trip back yet, but the streams in the south seem to be a reference to the seasonal rains returning to the area after the dry period. It was a common thing that happened over there. There was joy when those rains returned, not very much unlike what we experienced here in Houston this past year. Oh, we needed that rain, and we rejoiced when it came. The seeds that we plant, though, that's what I want to get to. Verse 5. Those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. He who continually goes forth weeping, bearing seeds for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. So in this passage, tears are expressed as seeds, weeping, bearing seed for sowing. It's like we've got a sack full of seed and we're just scattering them along as we walk. I think it's kind of easy to get that mental picture in our head, considering the situation they were in, to think about the joy that they would have expressed upon returning home. But there's definitely something that you and I can take away from this as well. We all face times of difficulty in our lives. We all do, where there's weeping. When we're burdened with sorrow, we must continue to seek the kingdom of God. Everlasting life. Reference back to Galatians 6. Let us not grow weary, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. We'll have times of sorrow where we're sowing tears, scattering that seed, but we shall doubtless come again with rejoicing. Just like the global seed vault, with the wide variety of seeds. You'll remember the picture in those three interior compartments holding millions of seeds in there. Members within the Church of God, we have a wide variety of sorrow, don't we? We know the stories. We see the prayer requests. We know what we deal with in our own lives. Tears are being sown, but don't lose heart. It should remind us of something the Apostle Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. You want to turn there next with me, 2 Corinthians 4, picking it up in verse 16. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16. So he's talking about all these various challenges that we face. And they are difficult, no doubt. But I think there's a connection to what we've been talking about today, sowing seeds that lead to everlasting life. Let's read how Paul described it. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16. Therefore, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. That's what's developing and growing there in our hearts, in our personal garden. The seeds are at work. Verse 17, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Eternal. We're talking about everlasting life. The sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory which shall be revealed in us. That's Romans 8, verse 18. They're not worthy to be compared. But again, we can't lose heart. See the big picture. Realize what we're going to reap. Verse 18. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary. All these things we go through, all those things are temporary. But the things which are not seen are eternal. The day is going to come when you and I will have the privilege and opportunity to reap everlasting life. Our tears can lead to everlasting life. But we have to stay with it, focusing on those things which are unseen. We're ultimately talking about the kingdom of God. There's more that we could discuss, though. Tears are just one way of sowing seed. There's much more. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 11. Proverbs 11. Perhaps this next point's a bit more obvious, but it's very important nonetheless. Proverbs 11, beginning in verse 18. Proverbs 11, 18. The wicked man does deceptive work, but he who sows righteousness will have a sure reward. We've already been talking about that sure reward, everlasting life. But another seed that we should be sowing is righteousness. Why? Verse 19. As righteousness leads to life, so he who pursues evil pursues it to his own death. I think that's appropriate for us to consider as we look towards the Passover and days of unleavened bread. Unleavened bread especially, remember, that represents righteousness. We're to put out sin, which is represented by leaven, and also put in righteousness, represented by the unleavened bread. So this is a seed that leads to everlasting life. Righteousness leads to life. Some people seem to think that righteousness is loosely based upon simply being a good person. That's not accurate enough. We actually have a very straightforward definition in Psalm 119. It's Psalm 119, verse 172. Let me just read it to you. It says, "My tongue shall speak of your word, for all your commandments are righteousness." That's Psalm 119, 172. All your commandments are righteousness. So there's a very close relationship between the law of God and righteousness. To get back to the seeds that we plant, seeds leading to everlasting life, we need to be obeying the commandments of God, walking in His ways, allowing His law to direct our path. If you've not subscribed to the Life Open Truth daily Bible verse blog, I strongly encourage you to do so. It's a wonderful resource, the daily Bible verse blog. I find myself reading it all the time. It's usually just very brief commentaries and explanations on various scriptures. But I want to share what it has to say about this verse, Psalm 119, 172. It has more to say, but I picked out one section. It says, the Apostle Paul expanded on the greatness of God's law, but by describing it as holy and just and good and spiritual. It's in Romans chapter 7, verses 12 and 14. Understanding the depth of God's righteousness as revealed through His law is a lifetime pursuit. It's the end of the quote, but it is so very true. It's a lifetime pursuit. But those seeds that we're sowing are so incredibly valuable. And remember, we're talking about righteousness, submission to and obedience of God's law. It's not self-righteousness. That's something very different. Christ said that our righteousness should exceed the, quote, righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, i.e. the self-righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. That's something different, where they thought they could somehow maneuver and manipulate their way around receiving a reward simply by their own works. That's a wrong way of thinking. So to be completely clear, there's no possible way that we could ever earn salvation by ourselves alone. It just can't happen. But we should be sowing seeds of righteousness. Another seed that we sow is influence. Our influence on those around us. Now, you can take that in many different directions. Let your light shine before men so that they may see your good works and glorify God. That's Matthew 5, verse 20. But it's talking about influence. Mr. Welch's sermonette last week. He discussed Philippians 4, verse 5, let your gentleness be known to all men. Again, that's talking about our influence. And there are many other directions that you could take that. Just going to share one aspect of this particular topic this afternoon. Really enjoyed having the opportunity of having our Sabbath school program pick back up again. I think it's a wonderful blessing to have Sabbath school for our preteens. I certainly appreciate Allie being willing to coordinate that. As you think about the young ones here in our congregation, from the parents' perspective, we should be sowing seed in our children. Talking about that seed of influence. See what I'm talking about? Why don't we go to Deuteronomy chapter 6? Deuteronomy 6. Verse 4. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. Verse 6, and these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. These are God's expectations of us as parents. He expects us to nurture and encourage our children to develop a close relationship with Him and with His law. Our influence is very important. With the examples that we've just read here, it's practically every aspect of life. When it comes to our children, God wants us to be involved, directing them towards Him. It's more than just telling our kids what to do, though. I know I sometimes fall into lecture mode with my own children. There's an appropriate time for that, for sure. But I think our example is equally important. What sort of influence does my example make towards my children? The passage we've just read here, it talks about all these different ways that we can talk about God with our children. But look up at verse 5 one more time. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. Remember the words of Christ. He said, if you love me, keep my commandments. Is that the influence that my children see? Do they see my love for God? And in turn, does that encourage them to love God? Verse 6, these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. Are they? Are His words in my heart? Or am I saying one thing and doing something very different? What sort of seeds am I sowing with my children? It's important to God, and it should be important to us as well. When it comes down to it, though, our children have to answer that calling for themselves. Although parents do have a very important role to play within that relationship, parents sow the seeds of influence. Okay, so we're using this garden analogy for the sermon today. We've talked about the soil, how we should break up that fallow ground, allowing the seeds a better chance at flourishing. And for the seeds themselves, we recognize just how significant they are to the process. They're incredibly valuable. After all, if you don't plant any seeds, then you're not going to grow anything. I want to continue along with this analogy and now talk about the fruit that our garden should produce, the fruit we should produce. Final verse this afternoon is John 15. This is Christ speaking to His disciples. I'm going to pick it up in verse 16. John 15, verse 16. John 15, 16. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, He may give you. These things I command you, that you love one another. Go ahead and make these verses personal. Put your name in there. You did not choose me, James Ellis, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and our fruit should remain. That's the expectation. Our fruit should remain. It was actually a long time ago that I came across this story that I'm about to share with you, but it literally comes to my mind every time I read this passage. In the 1630s, a gentleman by the name of John Endicott lived in Massachusetts Bay Colony, where he served as the colony's governor. So this is the 1630s. Keep in mind that the Puritans landed on Plymouth Rock in 1620, and the Declaration of Independence wasn't signed until 1776. So this was a very long time ago. Sometime in the 1630s, John Endicott planted a pear tree. I have a photo, Mr. Winkay. I don't know where we are. If you can jump forward too. Yes, yes, that's a photo there of John Endicott as well as his pear tree. Nearly 400 years later, that very same pear tree is still alive and doing well. In fact, it's said that this tree still bears fruit even to this day. And, you know, in my mind, that's incredible to think about. Scarlett and I once had a pear tree in our backyard. It lasted about 10 years. After 10 years, that tree died. And this one here has been thriving for 400 years. I find trees fascinating. I always have. If you read through the history of this particular tree, it has endured a great deal throughout the entire life of this tree. Suffered damage from four different hurricanes, 1804, 1815, 1843, 1934, four different hurricanes. And then back in 1964, it suffered some serious vandalism. Someone took a hacksaw to the limbs as well as part of the trunk. Apparently, by the time they were done with it, all that was left was about 6 feet of the trunk. It was all. You can imagine what it must have looked like standing there without any branches, no leaves. But after several weeks, they say it started growing shoots off the trunk again. I know it's just a tree, but it's almost as if it just refused to be defeated. Obviously, it recovered from that vandalism, just like it recovered from the hurricanes. And it's still alive, still producing fruit. In my mind, that's just a very inspiring analogy for us to consider. Go back to the very beginning of your calling. Take a moment to consider your own life and the fruits that are being grown. For God's glory, of course, but you know, I think there's a lot of truth to the visualization of that 6-foot tree. Lacking any limbs, no leaves, no fruit. Like it or not, we have moments like that in our lives, don't we? Where we're not as fruitful as we're intended to be. Doesn't have to stay that way. We can recover, just like that Endicott pear tree did. Don't give up. I realize that none of us here today are anywhere close to being 400 years old, but does our fruit remain? It's a good question. Despite what's going on around us in the environment, are we being fruitful? And does that fruit remain? When you talk about physically gardening, it really does take a lot of work to care for and nurture those plants. We want our garden to be as fruitful as it can be. There are things that we have to watch out for, right? There's a constant battle of keeping the weeds out. You've got to watch out for predators. Protect the fruit that's being produced within that garden, keeping those things out of there. I know one year I had a terrible experience with hornworms. They blend in so well with the tomato plants, you can't really even see that they're there. Within about 2 days, they had completely destroyed every single tomato plant in my garden. All of the fruit was gone. And it was because I didn't do my due diligence in keeping out those hornworms. You have to take steps to prevent and avoid disease. Most of the time, disease spreads very quickly throughout a garden. The point is, there's many different areas that we have to watch out for. And I'm just talking about a physical garden. The same concepts apply to us spiritually. There are many things that we have to look out for in order for us to remain fruitful. Some of you out there have never experienced the joys of growing a garden. I'd encourage you to at least think about it. Even something as simple as a small tomato plant on the patio. It's a rewarding experience, and there are some valuable lessons in doing so. Perhaps you're not interested in doing anything like that. I get it. Certainly not for everybody. But every single one of us are growing a spiritual garden. We all are. As we begin to look towards the coming spring and along with that, the spring festivals, I think it's important to be mindful of where we're at. What does our garden look like? Do we have any fallow ground, anything in our hearts that's intentionally been set aside? Maybe we've got some weeds and thorns popping up. Really need to deal with that. That's soil that could be productive for us. Break up the fallow ground. Doing that prepares the way for the seeds. We want to plant good seeds in good soil, those seeds leading to everlasting life. They're incredibly valuable. We've looked at that today. The Global Seed Vault's an interesting project, but on a spiritual level, we don't want to stockpile our seeds. We don't want to hide them from the world. No, we want to plant those seeds and use them. Those seeds leading to everlasting life. I've simply shared a few areas for you to think about. But you could come up with more, I'm sure. As those seeds develop and grow, eventually our little gardens start bearing fruit. Despite all the obstacles we face, hang in there. Continue bearing fruit. Let us not grow weary, for we shall reap if we don't lose heart.